2013. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Between the Covers on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Leland for visiting us at KBOO, and to all of you for listening.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. And don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all of your favorite KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge in Portland. Cause Cabaret While They Wait will be an evening of performances by various singers, storytellers, comedians, and dancers from the Portland area, and will benefit those attempting to legally immigrate to the U.S. The event will host raffles, food and drink, and music, and comedy performances. Again, that's Cause Cabaret While They Wait on Saturday, November 9th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Funhouse Lounge, 2432 Southeast 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. Welcome to November Black Book Talk. I'm Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman, and I'm here with
O.B. Hill with Reflections Mirror Image Books.
And Patricia Welch, Librarian Emeritus.
And this month, we have a very special guest. Actually, she's a guest and a homegirl. We have Renee Watson, who has written a new book. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
Her new book is called Some Places More Than Others, and it's set here in Beaverton, Oregon.
So Some Places More Than Others is about a girl named Amara. She lives in Beaverton with her family. Her dad works at Nike. She's a sneakerhead girl. And she really wants to know her dad's side of the family. He never talks about his father. He never talks about his hometown, which is Harlem. He grew up in New York City. So when an opportunity comes for her to go with him on a business trip, she wants to go. Her parents are like, absolutely not. But then she gets a homework assignment about finding out what your roots are and who you're connected to. And so she kind of uses that assignment from her school to beg and beg and plead to go to New York with her dad so that she can interview her grandpa and get to know her family. And when she gets there, she realizes some family secrets, and she helps to bring healing between her dad and her grandpa, and she learns about where she comes from. It's a story about her actual family and identity, right? Like the practical parts of who you are and the facts of your family, but then it's also about her ancestors. She's in Harlem for the very first time, and she is seeing monuments and visiting spaces that are dedicated to Black culture, Black history. And so she's realizing she's connected not just to her biological family, but to people who saw her coming, even though they didn't know her name.
Well, this has to do with genealogy?
Yes, in a way. I mean, it is about celebrating where you come from, and a little girl asking questions about who her family is. You know, she's very different from her mother. Her mother is kind of trying to raise her to be this quote-unquote girly girl. You know, she wants her to wear dresses. She is on her all the time about how she presents herself. And Amara's like, I kind of just like Nikes and jeans, and I don't really want to wear those kind of clothes. And she's like, where do I get that from? And she's like her dad in that way. She loves to read. Her grandmother loved to read. And she's interested in like learning the family recipes, like her grandmother who loved to cook. So I wanted to think about, what is it like for a child to have talents and desires that maybe they don't know where they come from? You know, like, how did I get good at this thing? Why am I interested in this? And then she realizes, oh, it's because my grandpa was like this and my grandmother was like this, and I have those traits from them. So it is tracing family history to find out who she is and what her identity is.
As always, I love the names that you choose for your characters. I love Damara. I love the grandfather, Grandpa Earl, and the new baby, whose name I don't think, is it Adela?
Adala.
Adala. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Thank you. Yeah, names are important. I put a lot of thought into naming my characters, especially the main character. Amara's middle name is Grace, and she gets that from her grandma, Grace. And I was thinking about the amount of grace a family needs to heal. There's a lot of kind of brokenness in this family, and she is the one that puts them back together and helps them forgive each other. So I wanted to think of a name that could impact her character and who she would end up being, that she could live up to the name Grace.
Place is also clearly very important to you. Harlem this time is so much a character in this book. We get to know, and I think if you didn't love Harlem, you would at least appreciate it, but your love of Harlem comes through so clearly.
So yes, this is a piece that I wrote for a blog post, I believe, and I talk about Portland and its complexities, right? I think home is a complicated place. There are things we celebrate about it, but also things that we need to kind of step back and critique and look at the things that we want to change. And so in talking about Harlem, this is what I said. Home for me is also New York City. I live in Harlem, where there is a constant hum, the brakes of a bus, music blasting out of someone's car, the bounce of the basketball during a street ball tournament, laughter from neighbors sitting on their stoops, watching people come and go. There is a vibe in Harlem. I can't walk Harlem streets without remembering that something special happened here. There are reminders tucked away all over the neighborhood, street names, statues, museums. This is home. New York City is also a place of extremes. There is great poverty and wealth, gentrification and homelessness. There is diversity, yes, but there are segregated neighborhoods. New York City is the place where Amadou Diallo, Sean Bell, and Eric Garner were killed by police officers. This is home. So yeah, that complexity of, I love living in Harlem. It's vibrant. It's definitely nurtured me as a writer. But it's got so many things that I'm frustrated about and that I want to change, and then I'm thinking about how do I write books that are also exploring and critiquing and talking about those things too, so that young people also know that it's okay to love places and people who are flawed. I think we live in a culture right now where it's just like, if you are not perfect, then I am done with you. And that, what does that mean for healthy relationships? So yeah, I'm thinking about how do we help young people see their homes, their neighborhoods, their families, their friends, their schools as places that they can love and celebrate and honor, but also say, and this part right here, we need to talk about, and what can we do to change it? So Amara's kind of figuring that out in a very subtle way. Most of it is celebration for her because for the first time, she's seeing Black culture in a very unapologetic way. I mean, it's Harlem, right? And she's coming from Beaverton. So yes. This is not my story at all, but I do remember when I first went to New York, when I first went to Brooklyn, I am of Jamaican descent. A lot of people don't know that, but my father was Jamaican. And growing up in Portland, I mean, you know, no Jamaican restaurants, not a lot of other Jamaican families that lived in the neighborhood. So when I first went to Brooklyn, I was like, what? Like, it was amazing for me. It just did something. I didn't know that I needed that. I didn't know that I was missing that until I saw that. You know, there's music, the people, the food, just the culture that is represented in a very everyday, regular way. It is not just for February. It is not, you know, special. It is special, but it is an everyday kind of specialness. And so that is what Amara is experiencing when she goes to Harlem.
And I would just say historically and now, Harlem has always been a mecca for Black people. And I don't just mean African Americans.
Right.
People of African descent from around the world come to Harlem because they know what's special. And it was just so good to see that with all the flaws, you know, every place has flaws. This place has flaws. But through that book, you could see and feel the vibrance and the history that you're not going to find in that kind of way anyplace else. And so I just thank you for that, because sometimes we need to look outside of our borders and say there are wonderful things, other places that we, as you said, you couldn't imagine. You didn't even know you were missing it. Mm-hmm. So I just so appreciated that.
Oh, thank you.
How does one get to Beaverton? How did they get out there?
Well, you know, I joke with people all the time when they ask me, "Why, you're from Portland?" I'm like, yeah, black people are everywhere. We are everywhere. So there are people who live in Beaverton who are black. This particular family got there because of the dad's job. He works for Nike. He went to school in New York at New York University. And the plot of the story is that he always knew he wanted to design shoes. He's an artist. And so he came to Oregon and started a family. And so that's why Amara was born in Beaverton and is from there. So yeah, that's why. And also I was talking about this before. I love August Wilson. And I remember when I first learned, I was in high school, I think, when we started studying his plays, and the idea that he was writing about Pittsburgh and different neighborhoods and throughout different decades. And so big picture, when I think about what I want my work to do in the world, I want to write about black people in the Pacific Northwest. And so I've started with Portland when I wrote, you know, What Mama Left Me, This Side of Home, Piecing Me Together. It's mostly north and northeast Portland. And so I wanted to branch out a little bit and write still about Oregon, but another part also because this is a family that is upper class. They're wealthy. He's a top executive. They have, you know, people who come and clean their home, and they've traveled the world. And so I wanted to also just show the diversity within blackness and that there are many, many types of black families. And so I wanted to show just a different family. I try to push myself to write something different every time. And I wanted to look at what does it look like to be a girl from Beaverton, Oregon, going to New York City.
So on Monday night,
yes,
we saw you at the Snitzer with Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
So Ta-Nehisi Coates, who I respect so much, he has a book out called The Water Dancer, his first work of fiction. And literary art, so I have a great relationship with them. I used to, when I lived in Portland, I was a teaching artist for writers in the school, and I did residencies throughout the city at Jefferson and Roosevelt. And so they invited me to be in conversation with him as a person who would represent Portland, to be in conversation with him on stage. And so it was a beautiful experience. I was, of course, nervous, but also really honored that they invited me. And I was so deeply moved that so many of my teachers from high school, former students, close friends that I grew up with were in the room. I do a lot of, you know, great things, and I'm always having to take a photo and text it or write an email and update family on what's going on. But to actually have my sisters in the room and to share this moment with everybody felt really special. It was, I would have done it regardless of what city it was in, right? I'm not going to turn down that opportunity. But for it to be in Portland felt extra special for sure.
The feeling in the room, oh my goodness, I don't know when I felt so wonderful being with a group of people, 2,500 people there, and the audience was so diverse. Young people, old people, black people, white people, men, women. It was wonderful.
And what is even lovelier is that the applause when you came out was as strong. Now, I was looking for one of your books on the webpage, and then I noticed that I would have paid in a foreign currency. That I was like, wait a minute. Where is this website? What is this? So how many languages are your books translated into?
Oh, I actually have not counted, but several.
That many? I mean, most folks have to get something in English.
I feel so blessed to be living my dream, like for real. And I don't even know that I thought about translations and that the book would come out in other editions. So yes, it is in the UK, it's in Korea, China, it's been translated in French, it's been
of Eastern European or something. I don't know, I should have gone back and checked the currency, but I mean, no, you are definitely international. And many of us don't know that. And many young people need to understand this too, that, you know, you put it out there and there's just no limit to what your reach can be. So I was just delighted to see that. But, you know, we've talked about the book and you've read a passage from an article. Could you read a passage from the book so our listeners know what we're oohing and aahing about?
Sure.
And for those who are just joining us, we are talking to Portland's own Renee Watson. This is Black Book Talk on KBOO FM.
So I'm going to read a poem that Amara writes for her suitcase project. And this speaks to what she's learned about her families, and these are the things she carries with her. I often say, you know, I can look at you and see the color of your hair, the color of your eyes, gauge how tall you are, but I don't know your talents. I don't know what you're afraid of. I don't know who you love. And so these are the things that are the intangibles that she brings with her. My suitcase carries grandma's recipes, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, ginger for tea, brown sugar for oatmeal, a deep pot for stews and soups, an iron skillet for everything else, instructions for stretching a little into a whole lot. Grandpa's southern drawl, his slow walk and brown fedora, a handful of caramel candies and always peppermint, coffee beans, and cocoa powder. Old records with jazz moans scratched in the vinyl. Mom's bundles of lavender for closets, coconut oil for hair, for skin, candles to chase away darkness, how she makes beauty out of everything she touches, her knowing even when no one has told her. Dad's verbs and nouns, his tapes and notebooks, a record of his soul. His voice always comforting me, telling me I am loved as is. Gray skies and Oregon rain, the beep, beep, beep of New York streets, rivers and roots, protest and prayers, all these things I bring with me.
One of the things that struck me as I was reading the book, I'm sitting upstairs in the middle of the night and reading, and I thought, the voice is just right. It really is an almost 12-year-old girl talking to me. It was just right.
Well, thank you. That's a high compliment. Yeah, you know, I try to get into how would a 12-year-old say it, even if it's a big or, you know, complex idea, trying to break that down into their language and their eyes.
Now, you're covering about four generations of people in terms of this book and the language changes and what have you. How do you go about setting down, figuring out how to make these different transitions from the various generations?
You know, I think it's that I listen. I listen to the way people talk. I am of a family that multiple generations gather often, so you know, from the oldest in our family being in their 80s to the youngest being a newborn baby, I am surrounded often by various voices and ages. And I know what it's like when you're in the kitchen or you're at the dining room table and you have, you know, that conversation going and the little ones asking questions and the older ones cutting them off to tell their story and just the chaos of conversation. As a writer, I'm always, you know, listening to how people say things. And so I think I was trying to lean into that when writing this book. And so when Amara's with her friends, you know, there's one way she's talking, and when she's with her cousins, and then, of course, with the older people in the book. Yeah, and those moments when her grandpa is giving her some wisdom. They visit the Schomburg Center, and he lays it down of why this place is important. And I think sometimes in YA literature in middle grade, we focus so much on that young person and the character, as we should. It's their story. But I do think there's a role for adults to play in children's literature, and I want to make sure they are full, realized characters and not just placed, you know, just not just in there to take up space, but that if they're going to be there, they're going to really be nuanced and layered just like the main character.
As with Grandpa Earl,
yeah,
and how he talks to Ava and Nina,
mm-hmm,
his granddaughters, he didn't just back off when they didn't want to babysit
yes,
Amara. He was an adult. He was a grandfather,
mm-hmm,
saying, this will be good for you. Take her,
yeah,
and show her around. I love that.
Could we talk about the cousins?
Yes.
Because in talking about them, we get into a number of things. I'm just going to say, Could we talk about the cousins?
Sure. So Ava and Nina are Amara's cousins, and they're teenagers. They're solidly in high school, and she's in middle school. So she's young, and, you know, and she's sheltered. She is the only child at this moment. Her mother is expecting, but she's the only child, and she's wealthy. And so she comes into New York with an amount of privilege and wonder and young, you know, just being naive to these city girls who are older, not as privileged financially. And so they don't have time for her. They're like, we are not trying to be tour guides. You know, she's in awe. She wants to stop and take pictures all the time. And they're like, come on, keep it moving. And also, they're a little bit jealous. I mean, you know, she is with her fancy, even her suitcases are super nice, and her shoes and her clothes and this nice winter coat. And she's not bragging about that, but they see it, and their father is in jail, and her father is here with her on this trip. And so there's some feelings there, and some moments where they kind of bump up against each other. And I just think that that is real. I wanted to also explore class within a family, and just what it's like to be young. I mean, I remember if it wasn't a cousin, it was a friend, kids just have those kinds of moments with each other where they get along one minute and the next minute they don't. And how do you apologize when you've said something wrong and hurt someone's feelings? So I wanted to just show hopefully the realness of relationships.
Yes.
But even between the two sisters, the way you show that, one sister rolling her eyes, the other sister whispering and nudging her, getting her straight.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And I loved that this little girl came from a very comfortable family situation. Mm-hmm. And many of us do. Well, mine isn't quite that comfortable, but the thing is, we don't see that there are Black folks who are executive in Nike and other international, you know, multinational corporations, and that affords a certain lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And we need to see that too, and I don't think we see as much of it. And but also the inevitable, if not a clash, that little nudge between the cousins, I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah,
but as you said, it's real.
And it's also, you know, I was thinking about there's this moment that the girls are talking about Amara's hair. She straightens her hair, and they're natural. And they have this whole conversation about that. You know, what is, why natural, why not? What are you trying to say if you're straightening your hair? So Amara's just, her whole world is opening up into what is Blackness, and what does she want? How does she want to represent herself, even physically, in the world? It's something that she's starting to think about because of her cousins. And also, you know, her cousins don't have a lot of money, but they have these deep relationships that Amara really wants. So they're super close to their grandpa. They live, you know, in New York, so they get to see him all the time. And Amara is a little jealous of that. So even though she comes with this stuff, they come with some intangible things that they both kind of are jealous of each other. And I wanted to just have that nuance there, too, that we can be wealthy in many ways, not just money. Yeah.
And you did that so well, I think.
Love the dialogue about natural. What is natural? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When Amara is like, but your hair actually doesn't naturally do that. You're adding product and twisting it at night and untwisting it to get that crinkle. Your hair does not do that. When you know, she's in her feelings when they start getting on her about her pressing her hair, which is it's a conversation I think I don't know any Black woman who has not had to talk about our choice and our freedom to wear our hair the way we want.
Yes.
Isolation from your culture is a very big aspect of what you're trying to do in terms of exposing her to who she was or came from.
Yeah, you know, I wanted, without being, I think I've explored this idea before in other books, like with Jade and Piecing Me Together, it's very explicit that she is a Black girl from North Portland, being bused over to another part of town, going to a private school that's mostly white, and it's in your face, right, that whiteness is impacting her. With Amara, I really wanted it to be more subtle. I do think that sometimes you don't even know what you're missing or what you need until you get it. So Amara is in Beaverton, but she loves Beaverton. Like, she doesn't really say anything negative about Oregon. She enjoys living here. She likes all the parks and the green and even the rain. She loves to ride her bike in the rain. She talks about that. So she isn't really saying, I don't want to be here. It isn't until she gets to New York that she realizes, oh, there's a lot about me that I'm connected to here in a way that she didn't feel in Oregon. And so that isolation sometimes is deeply felt, and a child might know the why they feel isolated. And I think other times it's a little more subtle and you don't realize it until you see what life could be somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So she talks about maybe what would it be like for her cousins to come visit her in Beaverton and have to see what life is like here and the things that they're taking for granted when they're having it at their fingertips almost. They're walking by street names of legends and seeing these statues and they're not even really paying attention. And she's just like, no, you don't understand. Every place is not like this. You're taking this for granted. And so I think, yeah, it would be interesting to see them have to come to Portland or to Beaverton and see what it's like.
Yeah, I love that idea of a statue right there in the middle of the street and of Harriet Tubman, mm-hmm. and then the
Adam Clayton Powell
yeah. there. How you describe the statues and going all around and looking at it in a way that when you see something the first time, mm-hmm. something that is much better than you could have ever have imagined it, and so many different levels of the statue and what it looked like going all the way around it. I thought, yeah, that is the way it feels when you go to New York and you encounter things for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But what I also thought was very real was the family friend who, like her father, is from Brooklyn, who loves the job at Nike, out in Beaverton, but comes all the way into the city to get his hair cut.
Yes.
And you realize it's more than a haircut.
Right.
He's coming into the city to get some culture. So, I mean, there are just so many touches that were just absolutely authentic. But I noticed something. Okay, you published 2 books this year?
Yes.
And you're coming out with another one next year?
In May, yes.
When do you get to do things like exhale and read? Do you get to read other authors? And if so, who?
I do, yeah. So, the way publishing works, sometimes books are finished so far in advance before it actually comes out.
Okay.
So some of it is that, like, the book that comes out in May has been finished for a while. So I'm not current, I'm working on new things, but I'm not always writing and traveling. I do read a lot, and lately I've been listening to audiobooks, which I'm just now starting to get into and loving. So some young adult authors that I love, and I speak their names often, Jacqueline Woodson, Bimmy Rudé, Tracy Batiste, E.B. Zaboy, those are authors that I think everybody should be reading. Julie Murphy has a middle grade out that I love. And I recently listened to Michelle Obama's book, and hearing her read her book was just, the best thing. So,
yes.
Yeah, I get to read here and there while I travel.
Tell her what you told me about.
What did I tell you?
Tell her what you told me about your rest time. This year, you're going to have rest time.
Oh, yes. And I have all of December and January off. Like, off.
Off.
Absolutely no travel, no events, just family time and writing.
Sounded like some cooking time with your family, too.
All right. Well, we have come to the end of the road. We always enjoy talking to you.
Thank you.
Know you're going to be back talking about your next book. So this is the end of the November episode of Black Book Talk. This is the Librarian Emeritus saying good reading to you, and enjoy this holiday with your family, as the people in this book will be doing.
We will see you next month.
Bye-bye.
A family reunion. Gonna have a family reunion. Ooh, family reunion.
I'm
I've never been one to like take a hand out. I still have too much pride to stand on an intersection or a corner or a driveway with a sign and ask somebody to help me.
Meet Amy, a homeless person in Corvallis, Oregon. To hear more about her life and what it's like to be homeless, come on over to Local Folks Podcast, Helping the Homeless, for episode 2. You can find Local Folks at kboo.fm. Go to audio, podcasts, and click on Local Folks.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Outside the Frame trains homeless and marginalized youth to be directors of their own films and lives. Their annual gala showcases a collection of short films by and about invisible communities in plain sight, young Honduran trans women who walk to Oregon, houseless folks forced to migrate in their hometown, and much more. Again, that's Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're tuned to Community Radio, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River, 104.3 FM Philomath, and the Willamette Valley. Stay tuned for the World Beat Connection.